Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Max Grubb, serving as our worship associate. He graciously stepped in for Justin Chekai this morning, who has discovered with a new baby that he wasn't quite ready to come back and help lead our services. So we're grateful to Max for joining us this morning. We're also joined by our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, and some musical guests. Many of you may have heard last week that our music director, Hal Walker, will be taking a two-month leave of absence through the end of July. And our music committee has been hard at work programming wonderful musical guests for us so that we can continue to enjoy high-quality music on Sunday mornings. Jesse Young, a member of the music committee, will be playing the hymns for us for seven of those nine Sundays, and he'll introduce our other guests this morning as well.
I'm happy to introduce Topher Starzik. So Topher began studying classical guitar at age seven and continued to studies through high school, was enrolled in Akron University's prestigious classic jazz guitar program. He went on to study at Boston Conservatory and earned a BA in guitar performance at Florida State University. Mr. Starzik has embarked on a successful performing career and frequently performs in Northeast Ohio and throughout the Midwest. So pleased to welcome him here this morning.
Brad Bolton will light our chalice this morning.
May the flame here lit be to us a symbol of the torch that is passed from hand to hand and life to life, of caring and concern and the passion for involvement which have marked the men and women of our liberal faith for many generations.
What words tell the truth? What bombs heal? What proverbs kindle the fires and passions of joy? What spirituality stirs the hunger for justice? We seek answers to these questions, not only for ourselves, but for our communities and our society. What are the ways of being with one another that enable life to flourish, rich with meaning? What violence has fractured communities, isolated people, and broken hearts? How can life be repaired? We ask these questions not to arrive at final answers, but because asking them is fundamental to living. Come, let us worship together.
Will you please join me in reading the words to our covenant, which is printed in your order of service. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another.
Memorial Day is the holiday when we remember and say thank you to those who died while serving our country in the armed forces. This morning we are also remembering Clara Barton, a woman who cared for soldiers on the battlefields of the Civil War and who then established the American Red Cross, an organization that is still vital to the safety and welfare of Americans, an organization that was called upon as recently as this past week when they responded with relief to the people of Oklahoma who lost their homes in the tornado. Clara Barton was born in 1821 in Massachusetts and was raised in the Universalist faith. She was the youngest by far of five children. It is said that she was a very timid and shy girl, and she became fascinated by her older siblings' interests. This curiosity led her to be an excellent student. When Clara was only 11, she left school to care for her brother who had been injured in a fall. She spent two full years of her early life nursing her brother back to health. When she returned to school, she was even more shy and timid. Clara's mother took her to a phrenologist who felt the bumps on her head and then determined that she would be a wonderful and sensitive teacher. That was the science back in the 19th century. But Clara was an excellent teacher whose first school won awards for its teaching methods and its good results. The school grew so large that more staff was needed. And when the new male staff members drew larger salaries than she did, Clara decided to leave, saying that she would never work a man's job for less than a man's salary. She was losing her timid ways. Her next job was with the Bureau of Patents in Washington, D.C. Clara excelled in this position, too, and soon was earning the same salary as the men. When the Civil War began, she realized that the skills she had learned while taking care of her brother could be put to good use in the battlegrounds. She organized missions to deliver needed supplies, medicine and food and bandages, and she had them delivered directly to the soldiers in the field. It was dangerous and difficult work. Her own health suffered, and in fact, she was nearly shot on several occasions. After the war, she helped establish an agency that found missing soldiers and worked with the government to create a national cemetery in Andersonville, Georgia. In order to continue her work, however, to support those soldiers, she traveled all over the United States, earning money by lecturing and telling people all about the horrors of war. Her own health further deteriorated, so she stopped lecturing and went to Europe to recuperate. But soon war broke out there. Wanting again to serve soldiers, she began working with the International Red Cross. When she returned home, she was determined to establish the American Red Cross here in this country, which would aid victims of disaster in peacetime as well as in times of war. Soon after its creation, the American Red Cross was called upon to offer relief during a terrible fire, two devastating floods, and a hurricane. The American Red Cross had become an agency that people could rely on to provide aid in the face of civil emergencies. Clara worked with the American Red Cross until she was quite elderly. Although once a timid child, she gathered the strength and courage needed to do what needed to be done. She stood up to physical hardship and harm in order to serve others in need. May we all be inspired by the dedication and courage of Clara Barton.
Wisdom words for Memorial Day from this little book, Bless All Who Serve, which is a book created by the Unitarian Universalist Association for Military Personnel and Their Families. This from Archibald MacLeish. The young dead soldiers do not speak. Nevertheless, they are heard in the houses. Who has not heard them? They have a silence that speaks for them at night and when the clock counts. They say, we were young. We have died. Remember us. They say, we have done what we could, but until it is finished, it is not done. They say, we have given our lives, but until it's finished, no one can say what our lives gave. They say, our deaths are not ours, they are yours. They will mean what you make them. They say, whether our lives and our deaths were for peace and a new hope or for nothing, we cannot say. It is you who must say this. They say, we leave you our deaths. Give them their meaning. We were young, they say. We have died. Remember us. And will you join with me now in the spirit of prayer? Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, we come this morning with hearts full of blessing, of joy, of love, and also full of sadness at the remembrance of lives lost, struggles fought, struggles still fighting. We gather this morning as a beloved community of memory and hope. May the ties that bind us one to the other be visible to us this morning. And may we, on this Memorial Day morning, find again in ourselves the courage and the strength to ask the hard questions, to say the right words, and to perform the right actions so that we may be agents of a lasting and enduring peace. Amen, and blessed be.
When I mention the American Red Cross, many of you will think of either disaster relief or blood donations. Years ago, I would have thought the same thing. It's understandable. All you ever see about the Red Cross in the media concerns its disaster relief, as recently demonstrated with the Oklahoma tornadoes, or the regular blood drives that the organization conducts. However, I discovered another aspect of the Red Cross that many are not aware of. In the early 1980s, I was nominated and elected to the Medina County chapter of the American Red Cross Board of Directors, where I eventually would serve as its chairperson. As a board director, I was quickly indoctrinated to its missions, principles, and work. And it was at this time I learned about the Red Cross congressional mandates. Founded in 1881, the American Red Cross was given a congressional charter in June 1900. In that charter, and subsequent ones, the Red Cross was given two fundamental mandates. You're already aware of one: disaster relief. The other Red Cross mandate is actually its first. It concerns service to the armed forces. Under this mandate, the American Red Cross provides support to active duty military members, National Guard and Reserve members, veterans and their families. It also provides emergency communication services, support for the sick and wounded at military and veterans hospitals, and assistance in obtaining emergency financial support. This interests me since at the time I had several family members in the military. And as a board member, I worked with the staff in recruiting and maintaining a voluntary cadre that stood by the phone 24 hours a day to assist members of our armed forces and their families with various needs. As a board chairperson, I often spoke to various civic organizations and groups about the various services that the Medina County chapter of the American Red Cross provided. I recall that after one talk, that a woman came up to me to express her thanks for what the Red Cross had done for her. She had been in the hospital with a serious illness, and at the time, her husband was in the Army and serving in Vietnam. A call had been made to the Medina County Red Cross and answered by a volunteer who quickly worked with the military to immediately bring her husband home. From time to time, I heard other stories which reaffirmed the work of the many Red Cross volunteers dedicated to service to military families. It also heartened me to know that the work we did at the Medina County chapter made a difference in people's lives beyond just disaster relief and blood donations. The American Red Cross' unwavering commitment to the members of the U.S. military, its veterans and their families, continues to grow and develop more than a century after Clara Barton first recruited nurses to support the U.S. Army. Today, the Red Cross is meeting the needs of a changing military and expanding services to veterans in several ways, including linking military families during an emergency, connecting military families to local resources and support services, providing training that promotes resiliency and preparedness to help families cope with the challenges of military life, and supporting wounded warriors in military hospitals. Through partnerships with the Department of Defense and Veteran Affairs, the Red Cross provides transition and reintegration support to wounded warriors, to veterans, and to their families. Today, as always, the men and women volunteers of the American Red Cross continue to show our appreciation for the dedicated service and sacrifices of America's military men and women and their families by being there to support them wherever they are and whenever they're needed.
We are not our own. We belong to one another, and in many ways we're responsible for the quality of our common life together. Clara Barton felt that sense of responsibility from an early age. Her life was dedicated to service. As a young child, she provided invaluable assistance to her family. As a young adult, she served her larger community through teaching. And as an older adult, she served both our own country and the countries of Western Europe during times of war. Even when the service she was prepared to give was not enthusiastically received, her determination to make a difference enabled her to be steadfast in her commitments. On more than one occasion during the Civil War, she was encouraged to stay in the safety of the hospitals in Washington to care for wounded soldiers. However, Barton was convinced that she could provide the most good on the battlefield. And so when necessary, she would prod and persist until military officials gave her the passes she needed to be out on the front lines. During the battle at Antietam, Barton actually ordered the drivers of her supply to pull ahead of the military medical units. She knew that if she got there first, she could get busy providing relief and offering hope, and this was her primary mission. She was devoted to serving human need. After the war was over, she took on a mission helping to locate and identify missing men, including helping to identify over 13,000 men buried in unmarked graves in the Andersonville Cemetery. It might be tempting to spend this long weekend just celebrating the start of summer, enjoying cookouts, shopping at the sales, and catching up on all the things that pile up in our busy days. But we're here this morning recognizing that Memorial Day is a holiday for remembrance. The Reverend David Pyle is a Unitarian Universalist minister and a United States Army Reserve chaplain. In a piece about the history of this holiday, he writes of the many dimensions of remembrance. These are his words. The true meaning of Memorial Day is to remember. It's to remember that the cost of war is almost always too high. The true meaning of Memorial Day is not to honor our dead, but to remember the price that they paid, to remember the price that their families pay, to remember the physical and psychic wounds that the survivors of war on all sides carry with them till the end of their days, to remember the lives never lived, to remember the losses to our national image and to our innocence, to remember the loss of possibility, to remember. In other words, as we remember, we must also wrestle with the consequences of militarism and the ethics and meanings of war and of peace. We have to spend some time reflecting on those hard questions we heard earlier in our service during the call to worship. What bombs truly heal? What spirituality stirs the hunger for justice? What violence has fractured communities, isolated people, and broken hearts? How can life be repaired? These questions are questions that civilians need to ask. This is what another Unitarian Universalist minister, Paul Oakley, writes in his piece about Memorial Day. He points out that military service members are not the ones who decide when to go to war. Those decisions are made by our civilian government with input from the highest levels of the military hierarchy. He argues that those of us who are civilians have an obligation to pay attention to the decisions made in our names, and when we do not agree with those decisions, to register our opinions with our elected leaders. Memorial Day is a time to remember our obligations. Those obligations include not only remembrance and political participation, but also paying attention to the ways in which our leaders care for military personnel and veterans who have been employed by our government in our names. In times of war, paying attention includes asking questions about the training, equipment, and support our military personnel receive for their missions. It also includes paying attention to the needs of military families struggling with the fears and burdens of their loved ones' deployment. And when they come back home, paying attention includes asking questions about the process veterans go through and the support they need to reintegrate into civilian life. Major John Morris is a chaplain with the Minnesota Army National Guard. In an interview about these very questions last Memorial Day, he explained that civilian communities have a moral obligation to help veterans reintegrate with their families and society at large. He says that when civilian communities shame and shun returning veterans, it ends up having a profoundly negative effect for the whole society, which ultimately affects everybody. He says this is one of the lessons we learned from Vietnam that we just can't afford to forget. Now, some people might say that Since we no longer have a draft and military personnel are freely recruited, they knew what they were getting themselves into and need to be the ones responsible for the consequences of their service. Others might say that since these problems were created by the military needs to have primary responsibility for dealing with them. In fact, both of these things have been said to Bridget Rainey, who is the wife of a deployed service member, a mother to four, and a Unitarian Universalist member of our congregation in Anchorage, Alaska. In response, she points out that, according to the Pew Research Center, only about half of 1% of United States citizens have served in the active military duty in the last 10 years. About half of 1%. That's such a tiny fraction of the population, she explains, so of course they look to the civilian world for support. Military personnel and their families are carrying a huge burden, and it isn't enough for the rest of us just to pay our taxes. They need more from us than just that. Jon Stewart, the host of The Daily Show, has done several pieces about these issues in the last few months. In one piece about the trouble veterans have finding civilian jobs, he asks why it is that we haven't created more programs for vets to transfer their military certifications to civilian certifications. For example, vets who were combat medics in war have difficulty getting jobs as civilian paramedics, even though their military experience has clearly prepared them well for those jobs. Why have we not found easier ways for people to just simply take a test or create some additional training in order to have that civilian certificate that would allow them to be employed in that work that they are trained to do? Finding a way for vets to demonstrate that experience and get required civilian certifications really shouldn't be all that difficult. In another piece, Stewart exposes the shameful backlog of the United States Department of Veterans Affairs in processing an incredibly large number of disability claims. Because of that backlog, which you may have seen recently discussed in the national news, over 900,000 vets are currently waiting to receive disability benefits, benefits which are essential to their health and well-being. And part of the reason that I think Stewart took on this particular piece is because part of the reason for the backlog is the fact that all of those claims are still on paper in this electronic age, and then there's a building right now that is having its structural integrity compromised under the weight of boxes and boxes and boxes of paper claims that have not yet been processed. This delay just isn't acceptable, and if it isn't handled soon, it's really only going to get worse. We're currently experiencing the largest return of military personnel deployed to war since Vietnam. The numbers have been rising steadily with returns from Iraq, and they're going to continue rising in the next couple of years with returns from Afghanistan. The struggles that veterans are experiencing include not only visible and invisible disabilities, but also mental health concerns and the deep soul work that comes from processing experiences of war. In addition, some veterans battle with addiction and homelessness, while others struggle with recovery from sexual assault experienced while in the military. We are very fortunate to have some excellent programs in our area that are doing great work with returning veterans. Family and Community Services supports not only Freedom House, a homeless shelter for veterans in Portage County, which our congregation has been very active in supporting, but also Miss Liberty House for homeless female veterans in Ravenna, and Valor Home for homeless vets in Summit County, as well as another shelter for homeless vets soon to open in Lorain County. Vets in these family and community services programs are also invited to participate in the Warrior's Journey Home Ministry based in Talmadge, which offers spiritual healing for vets and their families, as well as the Redbird Center, which offers healing ceremonies specifically designed to address the soul pain associated with wartime service. Those of us who haven't experienced combat really can't know what it's like to try to make that transition from war to civilian life. That's why we need to listen carefully to vets about what they need and support the programs that can offer those essential services. One of the things vets often say is that war provided them with a powerful feeling of being needed in matters of life and death. They say it can be hard to find a different but equally fulfilling sense of purpose back home, especially when it's so difficult to get meaningful jobs. That's why Team Rubicon was created. Team Rubicon is an amazing program, just started 2 years ago. It's both a disaster relief agency and a veteran services program. Team Rubicon accepts veteran volunteers based on their military experience and skill sets to be ready for deployment in the face of national disaster. Since its creation, Team Rubicon members have been mobilized to provide disaster relief in Haiti, Chile, Burma, Pakistan, Sudan, Vermont, Maryland, Missouri, Alabama, and New York. And just this past week, they deployed to Moore, Oklahoma, where they're focused on making homes habitable in low-income neighborhoods. They see their mission as working on the fringes outside of which traditional relief agencies typically focus their work. Using the skills that they honed for responding to emergencies while in the military allows veterans to give back in meaningful and rewarding ways. And since serving in a disaster area is likely to remind some of the trauma that they experienced while at war, the support Team Rubicon members offer one another provides them an opportunity to continue doing the deep healing work that they need to recover from their experiences of war. Programs like these need civilian support. So there's lots of programs that I could lift up, but here's the thing that I most want to say to you today. Just as much as veterans need supportive programs, they also need supportive community. And that's where we have an especially important role to play. I want our congregation to be experienced as a supportive and welcoming place for veterans, military service personnel, and their families. The members and friends of this church are not ever likely to be in 100% agreement about the politics of any given military action. But I hope that we can be supportive of the people who serve, whether or not we agree. I'm not saying that we should stay out of politics. Pointing our nation back to its moral compass has long been understood as one of the accepted roles of religious institutions, one of the jobs of the church, as one of my faculty in theological school used to say, one of the jobs of the church is to stand in judgment of the state. However, I do hope we can refrain from standing in judgment of the people who choose to do the work of the state through military service. Life is complicated, and we all have to make complex moral choices. The vast majority of those who choose to serve in our military do so for honorable reasons. When they come home, they may choose to seek out a welcoming, loving, spiritual community to help them process their experience. And so our obligation as a religious community is to be ready to receive them. As one of the Unitarian Universalist resources for being a welcoming congregation to military personnel, vets, and their families points out, it's not just military people who stand to benefit from a welcoming spiritual community. The congregation stands to benefit too, because perhaps people who have had to face war have something to teach the rest of us about humility, survival, and compassion. May we be open to listening and learning together, creating beloved community for us all. Amen, and blessed be. I send you with these words from Lauren Ballamy. If here you have found freedom, take some with you out into the world. If here you have found comfort, go and share it with others. If here you have dreamed dreams, help one another that they may come true. If here you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world. Go in peace.